This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputers moving up down under.
And Mellanox rides InfiniBand gains.
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for July 27, 2012. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. Opening ceremonies tonight. Does Australia have anything special to celebrate?
They do, not in the sports arena, or maybe they do in the sports arena, but in the HPC arena for sure. They've been very active over this last week.
A couple new supercomputers of Olympic proportions, maybe?
Well, there's one of Olympic proportions, a couple smaller ones. But yeah.
There's one on the medal stand, huh?
Yeah, there's one big one coming. Actually, none of them are out yet. They're in the pipeline, as we say. And the big one was, I think a lot of people picked up on this, the Cray Cascade system. They've been selling a lot of those out, and Australia is going to buy one of those. That one's going to come out in, obviously, 2013 when Cray releases that new platform. Then there's a couple of smaller ones that other Australian research groups bought as well. So they actually got three supercomputers in one week, which is quite interesting for a country the size of Australia.
Yeah, there were a lot of new announcements out of Australia, in particular this Cray Cascade system, which is, I believe it's going to be 1.2 petaflops, which will move Australia onto the petaflops capable list for the first time. Now, Australia has a computer that's close already, that's 800 teraflops, isn't it? The Avoca system at Melbourne University, which also had news recently talking about their simulations of the rhinovirus.
Right, that one down there, they had, they were doing the simulations of cold viruses with that system. That's a BlueGene-Q system, and right, that's 800 teraflops peak, and right below petaflop. And sure enough, like you said, this upcoming Cascade system will eventually be a petaflop 0.2. I think that's the second iteration of it. The first one that's going in next year will initially be just 300 teraflops. Then they're going to upgrade it, and with looks like the Xeon Phi, the Mike coprocessors from Intel on that final version, get it up to over a petaflop.
So yeah, two things that'll maybe go to a petaflop in Australia. It's not clear which one's first. It's not clear that really matters. But yeah, a lot of news in Australia, and then those aren't even the only two.
Right. There was a couple smaller systems that were announced this week. Going to Western Australia, where the Cray system's going, is the smaller cluster from IBM. Which, like the Cray Cascade system, is going to be supporting the radio telescope work going on there that we've talked about, I think, on different occasions. The square kilometer array has become this big growth industry in the southern hemisphere, and a lot of the infrastructure is going to be in Australia. And so they're building up their HPC resources to help out with that. And so the Cascade system, as well as that IBM cluster, is going to be supporting that effort. And then the one on the East Coast is going to be an SGI cluster, the East Coast of Australia, going into a research facility at Sydney, and that's just for general science, bioinformatics, quantum physics, all that sort of, the usual suspects of basic research that it's going to be supporting. That's a smaller cluster, like 100 nodes or so. Nothing close to the petaflop system that the Cascade system will be.
Right, more of a high-end class of system that isn't into the supercomputing category for us, but still a lot of HPC going into Australia, which we were kind of talking about it on our pre-show, Michael. But one of the things that characterizes Australia is that their economy especially in contrast to the rest of the world, really is doing fine. I mean,
it's like the recession never happened there. They've grown right through it. I mean, it's not like China where it's, you know, they're getting double digit growth. It's a more mature economy, but they didn't retract. They've had consecutive growth through it. They expect to grow 3% this year, and for the next few years between 3% and 4%. They've got low unemployment, relatively 5%, which, you know, is 3 points lower than the U.S. Got a great investment pipeline. They don't have crushing debt. I mean, they're doing fine. They're able to invest at a nice clip, and they've been doing it. I mean, they're, you know, we don't talk about them much. They don't have a whole lot of big systems, but they're the ninth most on the top 500 list. They're number 9 as far as countries go, below a lot of obviously much larger economies like the U.S. and China and the U.K. and they outdistance larger economies like Russia, India, and Spain and Brazil in that list. So they've actually been investing over the past few years, and it looks like they're continuing to do it. They certainly
or Canada, for that matter. I think they've got more supercomputing in Australia than Canada at this point, don't they?
I think Canada beats them. I think Canada's got one or two more. But yeah, Canada's obviously a much larger economy. For their size, they're doing awesome, and it looks like they're going to continue to try and up their game there. And like we said, they should be able to do it.
Well, you know, we get people ask us, regional splits for high performance computing. And normally when people calling us asking about Asia Pacific, their thinking is getting dominated by the Asia part in Asia Pacific. They want to know what's going on in China, maybe Japan, Korea, et cetera. But Australia, you know, we don't want our clients to forget is a big portion of Asia Pacific market. And they've got real HPC going on down there.
Yeah, they definitely do. And, you know, obviously it's very regional. I mean, to put them with China is sort of unusual in anything but a geographical sense. I mean, they're isolated. They have to have their own resources. It's an island continent, an island country. So whatever HPC work has to sort of be internal. But they sort of are batting above their weight here, as we've seen. And it looks like they'll continue to do that. It's a country to watch. I mean, they'll, you know, with the petaflop system coming in a couple of years, they're going to be there with the best of them.
Well, I ran a panel at the International Supercomputing Conference where I was asking my panelists how many of the top supercomputers, top 20 supercomputers, would be in Europe in 3 years. And Happy Sitole from the Center of High Performance Computing in South Africa specifically called out that he thought that the number in Europe would be falling because of gains in areas like Australia.
Yeah.
He said Australia right in his answer.
Yeah, that's definitely an area to watch. I mean, we have to watch Brazil. I mean, that's a booming economy, and they're starting to invest as well. I mean, they're starting from further behind. Russia, obviously, India as well, even Singapore. I mean, some of these countries, they have a lot of aspirations to build HPC infrastructure. And unlike some of these other countries that are in trouble, like in Europe, like, you know, we've talked about Italy and Spain and Greece, obviously, these other countries have the economic wherewithal to do that now.
Yeah, well, that's the big reason for the question is we're, you know, watching these macroeconomic conditions. The Eurozone crisis did have a measurable effect on the size of the supercomputing market, particularly at the high end. And, we're looking to see how that's going to continue to play out over the next couple of years. These macroeconomic conditions really do affect revenue shifts in high performance computing, and Australia, you know, is looking strong and is making relative gains versus these other countries.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, speaking about revenue shifts, we'll get to our next story, but I think we're going to take a break for our sponsor and then come back and talk about our second story of the week.
Mellanox's end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect products, consisting of ConnectX 3 adapter products, the comprehensive SwitchX family of fixed and modular switches, software, and cables, deliver industry-leading performance, scalability, efficiency, and economics for the best return on investment for performance interconnects. Mellanox provides its worldwide customers with the broadest, most advanced, and highest performing end-to-end interconnect solutions for the world's most compute-demanding applications. For more information on Mellanox's end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering, visit www.mellanox.com.
All right, we're back from our break. Our second story today looks at some of the quarterly numbers that got released by Mellanox, who just announced that they had achieved record earnings for the quarter for their company.
Yeah, that was announced last week. They came up with a record quarter of over $130 million, which is, I think, the best they've ever done.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, it was great news. It boosted their stock. I think it was trading around, I don't know, like $30. All of a sudden, it's now $100 a share. This was good news all around. Not only was their profit, they made a good profit margin. I think it was their, from a lot of perspectives, it was their best quarter ever.
Well, yeah, we don't do a whole lot of quarterly earnings stuff on this podcast, but it's worth looking at Mellanox when a big shift like this happens. And Mellanox is one of the relatively few companies in this industry that's big enough to be a public company, but still focused enough that almost everything they do is related to high performance computing. You know, after you look at some on the server side like Cray and SGI, you can certainly make a case for Mellanox. But then after that, there aren't that many examples of public companies dedicated to HPC.
Right. Although part of the story and part of the reason for their big quarter was they had a big Web 2.0 customer that deployed with InfiniBand.
Right.
As we all know, that's usually going to be an Ethernet win, but yeah, they got a big win. They didn't say about how much it was, but I think it was big enough to make that a record quarter. And it looks like from the way they're looking at it, they've got a pipeline of other, you know, web and big data customers in the business space that they basically didn't have before. They've been working to get into this space for a while, and it looks like it's starting to pay dividends.
Well, right, and that's going to be an area that we've been looking at in terms of how much is it going to continue to limit the growth or enable the growth further of InfiniBand. Our concern had been that in traditional HPC markets, InfiniBand growth was starting to reach an asymptote of how much it could continue to gain as a system interconnect relative to Ethernet of all speeds. That had kind of flattened out. Most of InfiniBand's growth over time had come at the expense of other high-end proprietary interconnects, which are largely fallen out of the market with the exceptions of a few supercomputers, some MPPs. Really we see the HPC market splitting between Ethernet and InfiniBand, and it had gotten relatively even. So the question for a growth standpoint was, first of all, is that true, or would InfiniBand continue to grow? If InfiniBand couldn't keep growing there, then could it grow as in other locales, such as a storage interconnect, or in other markets outside of traditional HPC, like this Web 2.0 story?
Right. Well, I think actually it is still at least marginally growing. Even the top 500, it passed that symbolic threshold of beating out Ethernet for the first time. It's has a few more systems now in that mm-hmm. list than Ethernet, so it's sort of passed that mark. And certainly the company is looking at that as sort of an indication of things to go. Now, we know that it's going to be a little more complex than that, especially at the top of the list there, but that was an interesting data point, and they think that's sort of a proxy for what's happening in sort of the rest of their market and maybe how they're going to be able to expand into the business enterprise area as well.
Yeah, I looked at our most recent site census data to try to get a sense of this, and with some help from Chris Willard, my partner, looking at the most recent data this morning, and InfiniBand did grow a little bit relative to Ethernet as a system interconnect, looking at systems installed, say, since the beginning of 2011, they're up from 2010. But the bigger news is when you look at InfiniBand as a storage interconnect, where we're seeing that connect rate at an all-time high and a big gain in 2011, 2012 relative to where it was in 2010. I think a lot of the growth is coming from there.
Right. I think when they talked about the earnings for this quarter, they said that basically, between 15% and 20% of their total revenue is now coming from storage, and they expect that to hold. They talked about some design wins in the storage area for those systems, for just the internal networks, and over the next few quarters or years, those systems will be deployed, and they'll continue to hold and probably expand that market, and if not that
percentage. See, if they're getting 15-20% of their revenue from storage interconnects, I think that's a big deal,
that
right?
Is.
I mean, that you're going 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, 5-1, 4-1 on revenue for system interconnect versus storage interconnect. That's a lot of dollars that are going in there. The other effect I think needs to be discussed here, we're talking about growth of InfiniBand and how much Mellanox benefits from that. But the other factor is just changes in share. And with the acquisition of QLogic's InfiniBand business by Intel, I would not be surprised if Mellanox were getting a share bump there, just with more of InfiniBand overall being traced back to Mellanox.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised about that either, and especially considering that right now Mellanox is the only vendor out there with the latest version of the technology, FDR InfiniBand. So anything that, if people wanted that level of performance, and anybody with a Sandy Bridge system can get that now because of the PCIe 3 Gen 3 stuff, they have to go with Mellanox if they want that. So, and in fact, we shouldn't discount that. I mean, a lot of this revenue for this quarter and even for the previous quarter to some extent was based on the release of the new Sandy Bridge chips, and they sort of rode that. The FDR InfiniBand fits well into that platform now. They were able to extract the performance out of that new PCI interface. So there was some pent-up demand there for those chips because it was released a little bit late by Intel, and now all of a sudden it's surging, and I think they benefited from that refresh in this latest quarter.
Yeah, so a lot of things starting to go Mellanox's way.
Yeah.
I think they are going to be seeing this wave of growth in InfiniBand. Some of it came from this traditional notion of a system interconnect, but really I think the major growth areas for InfiniBand, if they're going to continue, are going to be in some of these other areas. And Mellanox, without QLogic there, is really positioned to be the prime benefactor.
Yeah, without a doubt. And in fact,
prime beneficiary.
Right, and they're very bullish. They're thinking in Q3, they're looking at between 150 and 155 million in revenue, which would be another record revenue quarter. So they're thinking all of this that they're building up is going to continue, and they're going to still ride this wave for the foreseeable future.
Well, it's always fun to watch these public companies that are HPC-oriented because everyone gets to know exactly how well they're doing, right?
Exactly. These private companies, you don't know what's going on. They say they're growing great guns, but, who knows? But
right. Yeah. Or the larger, but, you get HP or EMC or Cisco, and, you don't know how much they're public companies, but they're not. Their stock prices aren't that swayed by what goes on in HPC.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I think that'll wrap it up for this week, and we'll start it up again. We're getting in the dog days of summer, and we'll see how the news pans out.
Great. Thanks a lot, Michael.
All right.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.